This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is our episode of News and Cues. We get to talk about lots of exciting Star Wars news, tidbits, and take great questions from our listeners. I am very excited to talk about Star Wars today, Ken.
You know what? We keep talking about, hey, we're real fans, man. And we got some Star Wars adventures that prove that. But then, I don't know, there's something lately we've just been having so much fun. We want to thank you all for going along on the journey and adventure with us. The lockdown's a tough situation, and we're here to get through it, and we're here to support what it takes to get through and get and end this pandemic. But I also have, there's little positives, and just Joseph, we've been in such a fun rhythm recording remotely that it's actually just been a lot of fun to get to it every day, every week. And thank you, sir. And also, let's not bury the lead. We're recording this. We're releasing it a day later, but we're recording this on your birthday. So happy. Well, I guess in Star Wars, it's just birthday, not name day, but happy birthday, sir.
Well, I thank you very much. And I am having a happy birthday and a happy name day. And honestly, I have been like really busy and stressed, all good things, lucky to have work, juggling a lot, all that kind of stuff. And then I was able to take the weekend mostly off with my wife. And then I had that little bit of like, oh, but I have stuff to do on my actual birthday. And then I was like, no, this is great. I get to talk about Star Wars on my birthday. Yeah. And I am truly like legitimately excited to be doing this as a birthday activity.
Well, that's a great way to start the celebration. More to come, sure. Before we get into those news, cues, and more, I'm going to remind you all that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from, probably rising for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, we'll have our 4center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. We always like to talk about our Star Wars and or life adventures. And we'll start with you, sir, because you're celebrating, you're playing Star Wars games, you're drinking. Oh, man, you're living good.
I am. I'm having a good life. Yeah, that was a really fun Star Wars adventure that I had. Taking Saturday and Sunday off this weekend, I just wanted to do a collection of random fun things. A while back, I bought the Blu-ray set of the complete 1960s Batman show, which my wife has never watched. So we watched a couple episodes of that. I read some of the Poe Dameron book, did a couple other, you know, little fun things, watched some Doctor Who. But then I specifically wanted to make time for Star Wars in the weekend. And I played this game called the Hoth Ice Planet Adventure Game, which is a reprint recreation of an actual game from the year 1980 that I did not have when I was a child. I had the Escape from Death Star game from A New Hope, but I did not have this one. So when I saw they were doing this cool reprint with a retro Luke Skywalker action figure, I had to pick it up. It's super cheap on Amazon. It's like $15 right now. And I knew going in, because I've played Escape from the Death Star, that this was probably not going to be like an award-winning board game. As board games go, but it was so much fun, Ken, because it's so exactly of its time. Everything in the game is based on flicking a spinner. There is nothing that the players can do to one another or to impact one another's journeys. So you really don't need to play with another person. You go around Hoth, and then you have these weird fights that are not fights with Boba Fett and an AT-AT, and then you have to go circle Darth Vader's orbit in the middle of the board, and then you get to defeat Darth Vader by trying to flick to the number 13 on the spinny board.
I love a good flick. That's a classic. Yeah, I got to give that a try. I have like three copies of the Death Star game. I'll have to add the Hoth one to my collection and then actually play these games. That's fun. And definitely, if you're going to celebrate a birthday, and you know, age is a number, but it's good to go back in your mind to when you were a kid and just popping bubbles and flicking a little spin.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just so cool to get that window into the marketing of the time. So like some of the illustrations are like very old school, very like, hey, that's close enough to Boba Fett. Sure. He has a button there. Like, yeah. Darth Vader's chest unit. That's his entire chest. That covers both nipples, right? It's that big? Yeah, sure. We don't have art of what Luke and Leia are going to look like yet in Empire, so it's just a picture of them from A New Hope. And then throughout the instructions, they keep calling Vader Darth.
That's awesome.
It's so dated and now reads so condescending. It's like, so if you want to defeat Darth, just get to his orbit. And like, yeah, it's so great.
You know, someone in a room back in the day is like, well, that Ben guy calls him Darth. That's his name.
Yeah, it's just his first name. And now it feels so offensive. It feels like calling him Steve, right?
Chad Vader.
Yeah.
Final video of our past. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then if I may nerd out very quickly about the Luke Skywalker action figure. So, They're putting out these retro figures that are actually, you know, recreations for the most part of actual figures that were out back in the day. This is one that they never made. It was Luke Skywalker in Snowspeeder pilot outfit. But I didn't realize until I opened the whole box. You know how back in the day they did not have the advanced lightsaber toys, you know. Right. It was just, a piece of plastic where the hilt was the same color as the blade. And in Empire Strikes Back era, it was yellow for inexplicable reasons, just yellow. And this one came with a blue lightsaber. Still that same design where the hilt and the blade are the same color, but a blue one. And that was literally a childhood dream come true. That's what we had to deal with in Star Wars in the old days of, what if they could make the plastic blue? And they did. They made the plastic blue.
Back in your mind, way to celebrate Empire on your birthday. That's awesome. Yeah, that's bigger. I didn't think, yeah, you're right. It didn't make a X-Wing Hoth Luke. I love the name of the game. Hoth Ice Planet Battle from the motion picture of Star Wars 2, the game.
Exactly. It makes little to no narrative sense, but it's all the fun stuff from Empire Strikes Back.
Well, that's a good way to celebrate your birthday. And you were telling me after this birthday and Empire, that this is an actual anniversary, right?
Yeah, yeah, because I saw Empire Strikes Back on my birthday. You know, obviously it came out in May, and then, you know, my parents made me wait. So this is my actual anniversary of seeing Empire Strikes Back, which is pretty damn amazing to think. Oh, fast forward all these years that this is then how I would spend another birthday is chatting about Star Wars, which is great.
Oh, we are living the dreams of our youth. But how, man. May to August, that's a run for a kid to not be withheld from seeing the space movie.
Yeah, I just didn't know. I put it together later in adulthood where it's like, wait, that movie came out in May. I wonder it's possible that my parents lied to me, because I remember like seeing the commercials and losing my mind and being so excited and seeing it in newspapers and going to get the Burger King cups and everything and hunting for the action figures. They might have just told me it hasn't come out yet.
It's on the way. It's on the way.
Yeah. But I mean, it's such a different time. Like, what am I going to do? Google it? No. You know?
Yeah. Wait for the Starlog review to show up in your mailbox.
Yeah. But how about you? I went on for a while about my adventures on the ice planet. By the way, my wife defeated Darth in one flick of the Force. She defeated.
One flick.
Yeah. One flick Darth and he's down. What are your adventures? Did you do any flicking with the Force?
I did not flick the Force. We did watch Revenge of the Sith, very late night viewing here the other night. Grace has been on this journey to kind of just rewatch all the films. We're not doing it in any order, though, which is great. We watched Rise of Skywalker, Last Jedi, and now this weekend we watched Revenge of the Sith. We're just jumping around, and it's kind of wonderful. You forget it, and this is the power of Star Wars, a movie we've both seen many times. We sat down to watch it close to 11:30. We're both occasionally night owls. I usually start passing out by 11, but I stay up till 2. And I just had that thing. I was like, well, this is kind of a long one, but all right, we'll see how far we get into it. We watched the whole thing. It's the power of Star Wars. Once you're in, you're on that journey. And we just kind of shot through, and it was just kind of fun. And it was good to, we did that Star Wars ranked about Palpatine. And so to focus a lot on Palpatine while watching this one, also some good stuff. About Yoda, some things that'll pop up again in our discussion on Clone Wars report this week. It's fun to just kind of every once in a while go back and watch these things you're familiar with, but just focus on that one thing or focus on something specific on that viewing. That was good. And to see Grace's joy, but also pain at Boga the Viractyl.
I believe Boga survived. That is my headcanon.
I have to believe that.
Yeah. I know Grace is a big Kylo fan. Does she like the Anakin of Revenge of the Sith, given that she has a fondness of tortured men?
Yeah. I don't know how she ended up with me, but I'm tortured in a different way. Yes. In fact, at some point she was rooting for him. There's no right way to watch Star Wars, but but here's what she said. She actually brought up a good point. She goes, I have a lot of sympathy for Anakin. I get what's happening, and I can understand it from a certain point of view. And I think it's all about choices. We had a good discussion. She asked, was Padme just always fated to die? And, was who put those dreams in Anakin's head and everything? And I think there is a right answer about those dreams. Is it Palpatine? Is it the Force? Is it Anakin himself? Manifestations of his own fears. I'm there for any of those discussions, right? I don't remember offhand if the man in the flannel ever actually answered that. But it was a good discussion about, no, destiny, choice. I think he could have saved Padme with some different choices, all those kind of things. So we had a good discussion around it. But also it just made me think to my own viewing of Revenge of the Sith back in 05. And you and I talked about our growth as fans, as it becoming prequelists. And maybe it was, we all agree Sith was the, quote, best one of the prequels, right? But I remember coming out of it going, I just didn't like his turn to the dark side. Happened a little too fast, which I do still think a little bit in the movie, but if you're tracking it, it makes sense, right? But beyond just the moment where he falls to his knees and henceforth has become better. I think back then in 2005, I was reacting to, this isn't how I envisioned him becoming Darth Vader. This is this all-powerful Sith Lord, the man in the black cape and the mask. And yes, he's this old guy at the end of the films, but I wanted something else for him. And I just, again, one of those things when you look back at George's point of, no, he didn't become Darth Vader as some sort of weird dark victory. It wasn't a this conquering moment of, yes, I am now Darth Vader. It was a sad, perhaps unavoidable, and at times I'll even say pathetic slip and fall into this prison. And it's not at any point cool. It's not at any point not painful and sad and completely tragic, but also not strength. Anakin does not become Darth Vader from some great point of strength. And there's a quote from Yoda in Ambush, which you and I are going to be talking about on Friday on Clone Wars Report, where Yoda just straight out says, you go to the dark side, you're a coward. And I was watching Ambush the day after Revenge of Sith, and I was like, yeah, kind of. And I do have some sympathy. There's some things, much like with Kylo, it doesn't justify anything. Doesn't justify the evil decisions or actions, but you could see where some of the stuff comes from. And I just thought, I still believe Sors being sliced down, Master Anakin, there's too many of them. That is, to me, Anakin destroying a vision of what he was, a 9-year-old, a kid with a saber and a dream. I think that was him destroying his past. And so anyways, I just was removed by the fall of Anakin on a different level and thinking back to how it just slipped by me in 2005. So I'll take that as a Star Wars adventure.
That was a good Star Wars adventure. Absolutely. You went on an emotional roller coaster through Revenge of the Sith. I think this is great the way that you are rewatching them and sharing them and sharing, Grace's perspective a little bit as well, because I think that's it's so great to process Star Wars in the kind of detail that you and I like to dig into on the podcast and make connections to specific episodes of Clone Wars, but then also kind of go back and just really experiencing it as a film and just kind of moving and flowing through it. And I think you're saying a ton of great stuff. I think Anakin's fall is really relatable. The reasons that he feels pressure and fear and anger are built up so well. So if you just sort of put yourself in his place and go like, well, the Jedi were kind of cold to him and they didn't let him rescue his mother and he has to hide that he loves someone and the Jedi are being a little shady, and like, you can really start to relate to the pressures on him. But then when you look at it from this other perspective, and the perspective that I think is Lucas's morality tale, is it is about, who knows exactly where that vision of Padme came from, but that vision is just literally fear of the future, and he entirely gives in to fear of the future. And there's such a big difference between, he did something awful to save Padme when she was absolutely in danger in the moment, and he selflessly was willing to do anything to save her, versus his personal fear of possibly losing her in the future. And he just chooses to believe that is true. And all of his actions in the movie flow from, he sees the fear of the future, and even though he's been trained to resist that, he just says, yes, that is what will happen. And so I'm making all my decisions based on something that isn't real.
Mm. Mm, yeah, absolutely. That nails kind of the whole slide, the whole decision. So again, we always talk about a destiny taking you to a point of choice. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, stay up late and watch Revenge of the Sith. Yeah, that's it.
That's a good movie. That's a fun movie. Makes you think. So that is that's my Star Wars adventures and my life adventures, other than just surviving the heat, as you were as well, sir. So,
yeah, hotter where you are, though. So well done. Well done. I'm sure it was fun to watch those Mustafar scenes while burning alive in the San Fernando Valley.
107, 95 in our house the other day. Yikes.
Wow.
All right. Well, with that out of the way, we are going to go into news. This is the news portion of our news and cues. And well, this week, got some fun stories, nothing big and juicy. I know there's some, you know, a lot of vague tweets going on, Joseph. We, you know, Star Wars Celebration would have been next week. So it makes some sense that maybe some bigger news is coming down the line. We will cover it when we have news to cover, right, Joseph?
Exactly.
What we do have to cover right now is the third and final book in the Alphabet Squadron series has a title and a cover. Nerdist, with Amy Ratcliffe writing the article, had the exclusive reveal. Say hello to Star Wars Victories Price. We have on the cover Will Lark, looking a little bit like Christian Bale when he grows a goatee and loses 60 pounds to be in a movie. There we go. We got a little bit of a description as well. Joseph, what do you think about, you could just start with the title, number one, and dive into the cover and description.
I truly, truly love the title. The title sounds like a really scary game show, but also absolutely perfect, for what the Alphabet Squadron series has been about. And what a great to know that the whole book is called Victory's Price, and know that the whole book then in theory is going to be wrestling with all these great Star Wars questions of what are you willing to do to win? Are you sure you're still fighting for the thing that you thought you were fighting for? Is the victory worth a consequence? To know that's not just going to be a chapter of ambiguous resolution at the end, but that's what this book is about. That's great.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. This is one of those, hey, that title says a lot, maybe says it all, and where we're going to be at the end of the movie. And it's befitting of this series that you and I both are enjoying. And Alexander Freed's a great writer, even though this Shadowfall at times was a little, you know, a little thick in descriptions and emotional descriptions. And it's not always an easy read, but that's good. I don't want all books to be an easy read. This just makes sense. And I want to see how Freed deals with the story is over, but the pains are present and the scars are there. Like, it's going to be some potentially really good stuff for Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah. And it makes me really, really curious to see if there's any possibility of Alphabet Squadron kind of echoing some of the ideas in the original trilogy's resolution of, is there any possibility that any of the characters will find their way to, you know, victory through mercy in any way? Or is it really like, Shadowwing's got to be put down, you know? And I think that this even this title is already kind of in conversation with the idea of how do you end a war and keep any sense of morality is great.
Yeah, and some of the description, it's a couple of paragraphs long here, not going to read all of it there, but the remnants of Alphabet Squadron seek answers and closure across a galaxy whose old war scars are threatening to reopen. And I mean, we're not even at the Battle of Jakku yet, so you know, those scars are real fresh. Soren Kais has returned to the tip of Shadowwing's spear. We know that. And it is interesting. I think it fits in with the story and having, you know, we read these books and we know where it falls on the timeline. And now just to go into just a simple canon kind of timeline kind of thought here, this fact that Shadowwing is no longer, quote, wounded prey, fleeing the hunters of the New Republic with its leader, its strength has returned. What do you think? Do you have any reaction to just, you know, Shadowwing, the Shadow Squadron kind of being this power during an era that, number one, we hadn't really heard the story before. Obviously, it's brand new. The Aftermath, Empire's End, and the whole Wendig series doesn't really touch upon it. So we're getting this new section of canon, and they're a big power, but in their own little corner. I'm okay with that, and I like that. You with that as well?
Yeah, absolutely, because I think Aftermath did a great job of setting up this idea that there are a million adventures from the very small of what's going on in a specific village on Tatooine to big galactic consequences of let's rescue the Wookiees from Kashyyyk, to the setting up of the government, like so many stories. So it feels perfectly accurate that there's a lot of stories like this this specific rivalry between Alphabet Squadron and Shadow Wing. And I'm kind of hoping that I'd be fine with the Battle of Jakku. That would be awesome. But I'm kind of hoping, since they teased it in Shadowfall, that what's going to give this higher stakes is that there's going to be something Coruscant related. To the storytelling, or some other really important system. But since they talked about Coruscant, and this book has really been about, you know, the heart of the war, that would be a great way to tie it in.
Yeah, I would. I have a slight expectation to have some of the canon that we know in this era tied into the story a bit, not in full detail, not that Leia shows up and is like, can I fly with you, Alpha Squadron? I don't talk about that, but just tying it a little bit closer to what we know. But I love what you're saying, because yeah, that's what Wendig's Empire, Aftermath series, I keep saying Empire's End, the Aftermath series did do such a good job. Yeah, every one of those interludes told a story that just was at times completely disconnected from everything else, but it still felt right and it felt good. And that helps me as a Star Wars fan that loves that rebellion versus the Empire and all that kind of stuff, that there's many stories to tell, and it works for Mandalorian. It works for this series, and a good reminder for myself to not be like too caught up in, wait a minute. Are we going to Jakku, or we don't need that. It's its own source, but it could happen as well. What do you think about the choice of Will Lark, or sometimes Wow Lark is what we'll say, on the cover here? This seems to me, not to lead you down a path here of questions and answering, Joseph, but just seems to be the perfect kind of character to deal with the price of victory from where he's come from.
Absolutely. I was thrilled that it was Wild Lark on the cover. Maybe he's Will Lark. I call him Wild. I was thrilled that it was Wild. He's one of my favorite characters. He makes perfect sense. I also did just about a literal double take to my computer going, that's what Wild looks like?
there was some other art early. He looked a little different. I think he's got a little grizzled, and he's grown that facial hair. It's changed his look.
Yeah, and it he makes perfect sense, because they so set him up as the leader, right? And perfect storytelling, I think, with Wild, of he was the person who did this out of nobility, but the person who desperately wants to go home, thought he was gonna go home, is willing not to go home. Nobody else is really in the right place or has the right skills to step up to be the leader, so he's gonna be. So I think he started in my mind as so the youthful, hopeful one. So to give him on the cover of this one, where he has to be the leader, what I now think of is a pandemic beard, because so many humans who can grow beards have.
Yeah,
to just sort of externalize we're going through some stuff. So that Wild has that too. I so pictured him as young farm boy with, you know, he's not literally from a farm, but, you know, young kid with big hopeful eyes and nary a facial hair to be seen. So then to see him is like, yeah, my beard says I've seen some things, Wild Lark. Like, it both makes sense, and I was surprised.
Well said, especially about the beards there. This comes out March 2nd, 2021, which is, hey, just around the corner. So we'll wrap up this series here, which has been a pretty interesting, deep, dark at times, but a real interesting addition to the Star Wars story. Any thoughts right now? We don't know the end yet, but any thoughts of just Alphabet Squadron's place in modern Star Wars storytelling, Joseph?
I think it's great, because I think it's a good example of how we can kind of hook into different Star Wars tales where there is so much familiar. You know, we got great characters like Harrison Dula. We have the shadow of the Emperor. We have, you know, some people and places and events that we're familiar with. But then we also have the new of these really well-drawn characters, these characters that you like, I would be happy to have a travelogue where we get to go home with Wild Lark. You know, just like, I want to keep hearing more about these characters potentially, because they're so great. And then the other thing that I personally love that I just hope is something that Alphabet Squadron encourages is, this is so gritty, nuts and bolts. It's war, it's soldiers, it's, you know, the vehicles, the starships, but they still live in a galaxy that is absolutely full of the spiritual. I love how much they are haunted by Palpatine is a Sith and how they encounter Jedi temples and weird Sith artifacts and weird cults that believe in the spiritual, maybe for good or maybe for ill. I love that they live in the Star Wars galaxy that I love, that can just be, this is the gritty reality of war, but also it is still full of space wizards and the Force is real, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And the war is sometimes on the inside of your soul. And that's where the book series has really succeeded and has its fans and has introduced a very compelling collection of new characters. And we'll get the end of their journey March 2nd, 2021. Speaking of, well, beginnings of journeys, which also are old journeys, get ready, my friends. Yes, you saw the story going around last week. Lego is bringing us a new holiday special. Can Rey get back to life day? Oh my God, this is going to be fun. Rey, Poe, Finn, Rose, and more are invited back to Kashyyyk because, man, people are always getting invited back to Kashyyyk for life day. This story is set right after the Rise of Skywalker canon. Don't worry about that. No, this is canon of your heart. Rey sets off on a new adventure to gain more knowledge of the Force. At a Jedi temple, she's able to have adventures with all heroes and villains. It's like a world between worlds all over again. Are we ready for a new holiday special, Joseph? There's actually already in that description some interesting things of post-Rise of Skywalker content that, again, not canon, not to be taken too seriously, but based off our discussion last week on Republic Reborn, I kind of went like, oh yeah, that tracks. This all tracks. Are you ready for the holiday special?
I am so excited about this. No offense to any other Star Wars content. This might be the Star Wars content I am most excited for. I love the tradition that Star Wars has of having a sense of fun and whimsy about its past, even a past as, you know, complicated as the Star Wars holiday special, and how anything that can ever even be seen as sort of like an embarrassment or something that people didn't like, there's always this attempt to, you know, reclaim it and reexamine it and have a spirit of fun about it. So I'm thrilled about that, of just, hey, it's a holiday special dropping on Disney Plus on actual November 17th, the actual anniversary of the holiday special and my actual wedding anniversary. So I'm excited for that. That's right. I got married on Life Day. It was very peaceful. The Wookiee singing was beautiful in the ceremony. I also just really like that Lego, to me, all the Lego Star Wars storytelling has the exact right tone where, you know, if you watch the Lego shows that they've made, yeah, there's things that happen in it that are not canon. Like, you know, the Emperor doesn't do a little dance and shake his butt at Vader when he gets mad. I don't think that's canon, right? That we know of, who knows, but it's all set within canon and characters and events that, you know, and everything tracks timeline. It's not just like throw it out all out the window. The way I like to look at the Lego canon is, if you like that idea of an unreliable narrator, that these are stories being told to you, like that this is, could maybe be a story that maybe happened, but it's being told to you, you know, at a bar by someone with a great sense of humor, who's adding all these weird jokes to like events that maybe happened, but are telling you in a really, really sly comedic way.
I love the love it and love the photos, because they've released a couple photos. One is like, it's like a bunch of Jedi, Kenobi, MC, Mace Windu. They got Sith troopers just all over the place. I love that. But the photo on the Falcon, which has Chewie, Rose, which is great. Rey and Finn all in their Rise of Skywalker outfits. Then you got Poe in a Christmas sweater, and there's a Christmas tree on the Falcon. I'm already there. I'm already there for this.
I'm all in. Yeah. And in that photo of Rey or the Jedi in the Sith facing off, there is a Lego that's just the top half of Maul.
Yeah, I just saw that. Yes.
Right. So that's the kind of, I think, just like really let's have fun with this comedy. But yeah, I'm also like totally pumped to be like, we just had this big episode about, you know, how much can we revisit these characters right now when the, you know, actors aren't on board, and, you know, what's going to happen if we write a bunch of novels and then they get wiped from canon. But there's still that hunger for, you know, post Rise of Skywalker content. So I'm excited for this funny take on Life Day. But Ken, I'm also pumped. I don't care that it's a Lego. I'm pumped to see Lego Dio. I'm pumped to see Rey's yellow lightsaber, even if it's in Lego form and she's cutting Darth Maul in half for the third time.
Yeah.
Just thrilled to see some of this content.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. What are you looking forward to? Maybe them pulling back from the original holiday special. There's got to be some references.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think some of the characters will return. I think there's a good chance of seeing Akmana. I think there's a good chance of seeing definitely some singing. I think there's no way they're not going to let the Life Day song go. Maybe I don't know if they'll just do it or if they'll have a different take on it. But the thing I really, really hope for is Krellman, the alien who pours liquor directly into the hole on top of his head.
Absolutely. I want some Boba Fett, maybe Boba Fett and the Mandalorian, Din Djarin, having a competition over the pulse rifle. I don't know.
Yes, right? Please.
Got to be that. I mean, doesn't have to be anything, but it'd be just fun. Like I said, it's such a wink and a nod to the past. It's perfect for, you know, you're never going to pull this off live action. We know this, but it's perfect for Lego. The spirit of the games. I was just talking on a stream the other day, like, go back. If you have never had a chance to play the original Lego Star Wars games, the volume 1, volume 2, give it a go. They're just so fun. The Lego games are great. Though the Lego games have grown and become almost more just like regular games, the wit and whimsy is still present. And it just matches up perfectly with Star Wars. It just really does. Maybe they could, you and Jen love the Freemaker Adventures, right? Maybe we could do a little crossover with those characters.
Yeah, I would hope so. And that's also one of the things that makes me really excited about this, especially this idea that Rey is going to discover more about Jedi and going to a temple. And I get it. She's going to a world between worlds like temple that's going to allow us to have fun with all the Star Wars characters. I get that's the point. But with the Freemaker Adventures, they did some awesome things there was definitely a sense of fun and whimsy. But in real Star Wars tradition, they introduced some, you know, weird canon that really had a little bit more of a spiritual, you know, angle, nothing too deep, but things that really reinforced big ideas of Star Wars. You know, I won't go into it, but you know, he meets a creator, and it's the whole Lucas riff, and there's philosophy there. And I think there's real hope for, like, I think there's going to be some touching, meaningful stuff in this as well.
Yeah. The chance in that wit and whimsy combined with the holiday spirit, I think you might have some moments and some fun moments as well, and hopefully Akmena singing in the cantina. It'd be you know, dare I say, missed opportunity if we don't have that. All right, from there, our final story is a test of courage. We got a little sneak peek from the Justina Ireland book that'll be coming out January 5th, 2021. Man, the lockdown's taking a toll when I think it's 2001. Woo! It's calendar right now. January 5th, 2021. And this, of course, is part of the High Republic series. Test of Courage will be one of the first ones out of the gate. We know a little bit about this. We've heard some of the stuff. We've heard Justina Ireland talk about it. Newly minted teen Jedi Vernestra Rowe is in the series. And then we got now audacious tech kid Avon Staros, who, of course, will eventually have someone in that family line named Sana Staros that we know from the Dr. Aphra series and more. We read a little piece of this book here. Joseph, what did you think about what we learned and read?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. I thought it had like a great pace and tone. I liked that it had some like energy and some forward movement, and there was a little bit of like force use right away, which, you know, hey, that's for me. If you got a Jedi in your story, let him use the force. So I liked that right away. We saw Vernestra using the force. I also really liked some of the stuff that Justina Ireland was saying about her approach to Star Wars storytelling for this age level of book and just in general. And in particular, I really like the description of Vernestra. Vernestra is one of the Jedi that I think I've been most intrigued by, of this idea of the Doogie Howser Jedi who made it to Jedi Knight at a surprisingly young age, which is just a great entry point for, I think, teens of all ages when you're at that age to go, hey, I kind of know deep down in my soul that I can do this, but I know that probably the world is doubting me. So I kind of need to prove myself to myself and to the world. But I also just liked your description of Vernestra as a Jedi who is doesn't have too many problems, isn't too caught up in herself, and just wants to help people and do her job. Because I want some of these stories to truly be what they've talked about with the High Republic of this is the Jedi at their best, and a good person, a good steadfast character who's going through a little bit of their own personal challenge and is being challenged by, you know, this horrible external event. That sounds like just great fun to spend time with a Jedi character like that.
Well, yeah, well said, because I really was drawn to parts of the excerpt that had Vernestra kind of being like, people call me Vern. I don't allow that. I know myself. I am pretty solid, have solid footing about what I want to be, but I'm excited. I got to get there. And there's things in front of me that aren't these big giant child of destiny type of obstacles. Not that couldn't happen in the High Republic. And not that we've already know some of the High Republic characters have secrets or, you know, of course that's storytelling, but I like what you're saying, that this is a fully functioning Jedi order. And so the characters have come from a different point. They're not hiding around the galaxy, right? They're not hiding their identity in a village or, you know, joining a smuggler like rebel crew like Kanan Jarrus and Caleb Doom. Who, what, where? I don't know. It's a different kind of journey. I'm excited to read that. That really jumped on out there. And this is what Justine Ireland said. She said, I think adults tend to get bogged down in our very complex, yet somehow mundane daily lives. One of the best things about kids' books is we're allowed to remember that life was once exciting and a vast magical mystery. She says, middle grade books are a great way to visit the galaxy for a little while and remember why we fell in love with Star Wars in the first place. For the kids, it's a place for them to interact with the ideas of character and struggle without the limitations imposed by icky grownups. No secret here, Joseph. We really have loved the YA middle grade readers, you know, different kind of age groups. But focusing here on the YA, the Claudia Gray stuff, the Padme novels, the Ahsoka novel, those kind of stories. Even right now, we're reading Free Fall, the Poe Dameron one, which is in that category as well. You and I just love these stories. And I think Justine Ireland kind of encapsulated why.
Yeah, absolutely. That sense of going back to a little bit of a point of almost innocence of, don't you just want to go on a big adventure? It's great because it starts to me even reminding me of like, what are the challenges of using the Force, of belief, of quieting your mind and getting rid of all those doubts and believing that you can, you know, and to have a stories from perspective like this Jedi Vernestra. Like, she's not, you know, a 48. She doesn't know that. Yeah, there's no point in trying to get to that planet in this amount of time because those hyperlanes are always blocked. So screw it. You know, just like that sense of not just adventure. What's out there? Who am I going to be? But just that, like, you haven't had life experiences that have made you pre-decide how something's going to turn out. And that's just a great way to approach adventure. And I think it is maybe rewarding for us, even though we are not teens, to reconnect to that sense of what if. It doesn't mean there aren't problems, but just like, what if? What if we look at things with a little bit more hope and enthusiasm?
Hey, that's a great way to look at life. And I think it's, again, it boils down the elements of Star Wars to a base level. And that is, we always talk about George and that 12-year-old that he's writing for, but it's why it works. And I'm excited to dive into this one. I think it will be just as essential reading as the big old adult books there in High Republic. Again, release date, January 5th, 2021. I'm getting excited, Joseph, to dive into the High Republic world, not just the stories, but the world. And that's someplace I wasn't exactly at when the news first got launched. And that makes me excited for myself.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited that it's going to be all these different stories, and I'm looking forward to being upset that they haven't yet made action figures of these characters.
I was just thinking that. Oh my God, you and I are in the same mind. just saying that because we know what these characters look like so clearly. That's been part of the unveiling of this series. So hey, it's to me no different than an animated series. We can get some fun action figures down the line, maybe. But I know it's a different industry.
It is. But still, I need a Trandoshan Jedi action figure.
don't we all? That is look at the news. Before we take a quick break and get to your questions, we are going to have an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what are we recommending this week?
Shockingly, we are going to recommend one of the books we keep talking about, and that is Poe Dameron Freefall by Alex Segura. We are going to be doing a discussion of that later this week, and it is very much like Justina Ireland is describing. It's really got its foot on the gas. There's lots of fun Star Wars adventures, and we're looking forward to discussing it between ourselves and with you, our listeners.
Absolutely. And to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. We are going to take a quick break, but on the other side of this break, it's all your questions here on ForceCenter.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, ForceCenter friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, ForceCenter's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to jennylanda.com. That's JENILANDA.com for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as Jennifer Landa 1138. Hey, Force Center fans, don't forget Force Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's Force Center on YouTube. Check it out. Welcome back to Force Center, the news and cues episode, taking a look at all the news. Hey, that's in our rearview mirror. Now, looking ahead on the road is your questions, Joseph. We have some good ones today. We always have good ones, but we had ones I had to like stop and think about and prepare myself for. What the?
Yeah, these are some good essay questions, I would say. You know, we always get great questions, but these some of these are definitely big thought starters and then have to be thought finishers in order for us to actually try to answer them. We always take questions from social media and from our patrons on Patreon. So we're starting on Twitter this week. And our first Twitter question comes from Rafaela. And Rafaela says, what are your thoughts on Star Wars books being adapted to movies or animated movies for Disney Plus? Which ones would be best for that? Oh, I get so excited about this question because I think it's such a great idea. But Ken, I want to start with you. What's just your general reaction to that idea of books being translated into live action or animated movies?
So I do think it's a good idea, but I don't know if it's one I even want. I'll explain.
What?
Look, man, there's no denying that it is just impossible to adapt books and movies successfully. I mean, you can do it. It's been done. It continues to be done, but they're two separate things, right? And yes, you can mention Song of Ice and Fire, but I'm even thinking Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is one of my big influential series, and it started as a radio play. Then became a novel. And then all the way up to 2005, which I think is an underrated movie that Douglas Adams had his hand in on the first draft of that script. But it got hammered. Forget the general critical review stuff. But in even the fandom, it was like, what about this part? What about that part? It's just the way it is. Very rarely do you have one-to-one kind of adaptations. And I don't know if I'm ready for that in Star Wars to have those conversations. Lost Stars was great. The animated movie was great. But there was that scene there. And I can't believe they didn't put it in. I think it'd be a little gunshot, but that doesn't mean I don't think it's a good idea. And Lost Stars would be one of those ones, though you'd have to figure a way to shoot, you know, Tarkin again or some of those, you know, you take go down that route. Animated would maybe be best for that. So I Leia, Princess of Alderaan, we've talked about that live action series. Maybe it would inspire a Leia, Princess of Alderaan series or direct animated remake. Put someone like Shelby Young, who I think does a great Leia. Put her in leading that series. I'd be on board for that as well. So that's where it starts, Joseph. Complicated.
Yeah. It starts with a fear of the future. A very reasonable one. I do totally get that. I have been focusing. We are being a good balance to one another on this episode. I'm so focused on the joy of the adaptations being well-received by the community that I'm just thinking of how great it would be to get some of these stories that are in the books in particular out to people who don't read books for whatever reason or don't listen to books. That's just not a part of their fandom or they don't have time in their life for that, but they can sit down and watch, you know, a 90-minute, 2-hour animated movie on Disney Plus. And I'm thinking so much about like, how great would it be to expand some of this canon that lives right now in the books and have more fans receive it? but I hadn't had the caution to think of it the way that you are, as we don't need another thing for fans to be cranky about.
Yeah.
Disagree over.
Yeah. And that's not the right, outlook. I would love any one of these, but yeah, that's where my mind goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a really good thought too, of, I still lean towards, I want to hang on to the hope and the enthusiasm of sharing it, sharing some of these stories with other fans. But I think you bring up a really good point about, they do have to be really good adaptations of the novels because they are different, different mediums. I think part of my excitement for this comes from, this is such a successful thing for DC. DC regularly puts out individual animated movies that are adaptations of famous comic book runs. And I mean, comic books are, they're not locked into canon, right? And these movies are definitely adaptations. They add things and they subtract things, and sometimes they change the tone and all that. But it's such a proven thing that fans like, of, yeah, if we like a story in one medium, we would love it translated to another. Now, with Star Wars, you do have to be careful of that, because you can really quickly get into that canon debate if you make a great adaptation of the novel, Leia, Princess of Alderaan, but there are additional scenes would be fine, but if they change anything or compress anything, then you do get people, you know, bickering over which one is more accurate canon. But I say, you know what, that's fine. I will take that in order to share these more widely. I also think it's a slim possibility that it's something that could already be in the works, because right now, when we're still dealing with unknowns with shooting live things, animation is a thing that can and has continued. So I'd be really curious to see if this is an idea that is being floated. So I think in the big picture, I think it's a really, really good idea. And the thing that, when I think of novels that I want, I think of novels that I think already in their pacing and structure lend themselves to being a movie. For example, I love Queen's Shadow, but there's a lot in Queen's Shadow in particular that's very internal to the characters' minds. And there definitely is some moments of conflict, but it's not a, hey, there's a blaster fight, you know, every 20 pages.
Yeah.
But other novels like Leia, Princess of Alderaan, moves pretty fast, and she goes from place to place, and there's a tense dinner scene, but then there'll be, you know, a little bit of action. So I think some books lend themselves to adaptations better. And the other books that I gravitate toward are the ones that those of us who are totally into the world of literature in Star Wars, that there are bits of canon from them that really inform how we think and talk about Star Wars. And I would love for those to be shared more.
Yeah. I don't want to sound like I was against this idea. I'm thinking of Siege of Mandalore, what we just went through. You know, it wasn't bad. It wasn't horrible, but like, E.K. Johnson's book writers, the show writer, and, you know, the battle. But I think what you're saying, just the spirit of getting it out there, getting these books, which we love, into the world and pulling people into them, it'd be a fair trade-off. You know, again, something that inspires a series that allows you to go in different directions. Again, going to Leia, Princess of Alderaan, where you wouldn't have to follow the book. You can maybe come out of the book into other new storytelling, would be good. But, you know, I'm thinking of Alphabet Squadron, you know, when that series is all wrapped up and done, people seeing those characters on screen and imagining them and getting inside their heads and still having the big pew, 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 and the conflict could work for me as well. But you know what? I just had this kind of thought, Joseph. You know what one I would like to see, which be completely different, but it would connect to things we know and love, the Phasma novel. Give me a one-off movie based off that novel.
Oh, I like that a lot. Because, yeah, I would love to see more Phasma storytelling. And I forgot to say, in fact, on our Republic Reborn episode that we did, in my head canon, Phasma survived. And I want more stories with Phasma in the future, too. But, yeah, I like that. I think my number one for this, if they were going to make an... I think the live action gets a little bit more complicated, so I'm more excited for the animated. Mm-hmm. Lost Stars makes so much sense to me. Because you have the thrill of, oh, there's going to be recognizable ships and moments. But the world building in that is great. And those characters are so clearly affected people. And it's different for Star Wars. It's got a little bit more of that romance focus. that I think Lost Stars would be a great, great first adaptation.
I think a lot of people would agree.
Yeah. A couple other for me that I'd be excited about because I think they would translate well and or have some like great juicy canon that I want the rest of the world to know is Leia, Princess of Alderaan. Bloodline. Bloodline in particular. For the kind of people who are like, I like Star Wars and I watch movies and maybe I watch, oh, Mandalorian's pretty short. I'll watch that television show. But I'm not so all in that I'm going to read a book. Bloodline, an animated 2-hour movie of Bloodline would help so many people who struggle with what is the political situation of the sequel trilogy. Just sitting down to watch that and going, oh, and they sent Ben Solo away and they didn't tell him his grandfather was Vader. Oh, my God. Like, yeah. I think there's so many bits of canon in there that kind of unlock the sequel trilogy in a great way.
Ooh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Finally give people some of those answers.
Yeah, yeah. And then the Rebel Rising Jyn story I really love. And I think adapting some comic runs as well. Rise of Kylo Ren jumps out. Parts of Charles Soule's Vader run. The building of the castle on Mustafar. All sorts of great stuff that I would just like more people to get a chance to experience.
Yeah, the comic stuff is... It goes well. And look, the Aftermath series, you have a lot of new characters that you wouldn't have to rely on if you're to do a live action, recasting too much stuff. Han with a beard comes to mind. You maybe have to throw Alden in a beard. I don't know. But animated, you wouldn't have to. But in terms of live action, there's a lot of cool stuff in Aftermath that I wouldn't mind seeing on the big screen, including Therapy Ewoks.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I think I changed my mind on everything. I just want a Disney Plus animated movie called Therapy Ewoks.
That'd be great.
Brand new canon. Moving on to our next question from Nick Field. Now, this is interesting because Nick is a regular contributor and always has great thoughts. Helps us keep an eye on when IgerCon is going to pop up. But this has great rhythm with what we were talking about earlier about the perspective of the younger reader novels. So Nick Field says, should Star Wars ever produce an R-rated movie or TV MA show? While the franchise has traditionally been kid-friendly, that can put a limit on what you can explore in a storytelling sense. For argument's sake, put Disney in the question of would this ever happen aside. I like that. Nick is a nice, practical question asker. So we're not going to discuss, are they going to do this? Are they going to put it on Hulu? Is there going to be Star Wars After Dark? We're just going to talk about the idea of it, Ken. What do you think of the idea of it? Do you want at some point, or would you be interested if it existed, R-rated Star Wars?
Would I be interested? Yes. There's a part of me that gets the desire to see that. And look, Revenge of the Sith, pretty dark. I was at the Cinerama Dome, seeing it in 2005 in front of, and I know I've told the story before, but me and my friend Joel were sitting in front of a group of like two moms and their kids, right? It was like a kid's day out. We saw like a matinee showing. And they were screaming and crying when Palpatine is being burnt and unlimited power, that whole sequence. And it was not a good screaming and crying. It was, these 7-year-olds will now have that. They're probably right now talking about it. Oh God, I still have nightmares, you know? And they're in their 20s. So we could get on to George's intentions and this and that. If we say that wrong, it comes off as too much of a high horse. I understand the desire and need for this. I love Nolan's Batman stuff because it is realistic and dark and gritty. That's kind of where I think a lot of it that started in modern pop culture. Watchmen, not the series, not the movie, the graphic novel. Go back there. Look at this, it's a comic book. Oh, it's a little bit different. All that kind of stuff. It definitely works. It definitely can work. And I think you could still get the same spirit and storytelling. I'm personally not over interested in it, but I fall for that. I think going into Last Jedi, I wasn't super familiar with Rian Johnson when he got announced. A lot of my friends were, and they were excited because, he did Breaking Bad. Oh, Looper. We're going to get dark, gritty Star Wars. And they carried that desire all the way into the screening and out of it. And they're still disappointed. So I don't know. I don't know. It's a great question, Nick. I don't know. Sometimes.
Yeah. No, I mean, your story of the unlimited weeping from kids who...
It was so bad, man. It was so bad. It wasn't like, hey, Timmy, it was like...
Totally understandable, right? I mean, especially... Yeah, anyway... I'm imagining them now just like microwaving cheese and it bubbling and going, oh God, it's like Palpatine's face. Remember the drama?
Yeah. Well, I'm still afraid of Large Marge from Pee-wee's Big Adventure because freak me out. I get scared so easily. I can only understand. Those kids, they're in their like 20s now watching this like, oh God, I gotta turn my head away when Palpatine gets burnt by maces.
Yeah.
The lightsaber reflecting the lightning.
Totally understandable. Yeah, and I remember my mom discussing with another mother about Empire Strikes Back of, yeah, well, there's a Wampa thing that pops up, and that's scary. Yeah. So it's a long tradition of this. Yeah, I have so many thoughts about this. I totally understand the desire for it, and then I have kind of these concerns of, I agree with you of not wanting to be on a high horse of like it can never evolve, it can never change. But mm-hmm. this idea that it is for kids of all ages is, you know, important. And I remember there was when my brother's kids were younger, they loved Doctor Who, and kind of earlier on in Doctor Who's reboot in the late 20-teens or mid-2000s, basically mid-2000s, late 2000s. There was the main show of Doctor Who, and then they did a spinoff of the Sarah Jane Adventures that was pitched a little bit younger. Mm. And then they basically did do kind of Doctor Who After Dark. They did this group of investigators called Torchwood. And I have friends who jokingly call it Touchwood because it's like real sexy Doctor Who. I remember my brother saying, you know, it's kind of a bummer to be able to tell my kids, yeah, there are three Doctor Who shows and I can't quite articulate why, but you can't watch the third one. And I think about that a lot of like, you know, you know, I've talked to parents who've like, yeah, my kid loved The Phantom Menace, loved Attack the Clones. My kid's not ready for Revenge of the Sith. I need to wait because that one is intense. So I just think about that a little bit of like, well, what happens when a kid knows there's some Star Wars that they can't watch for a while, you know? And, right. You know, different kids can handle things at different ages. And obviously parents and mentors and guardians are very good at assessing when that is. So for me, it's not a deal breaker, but it's a thing to think about. Yeah. The big thing for me is thinking of what would one get out of an R-rated Star Wars that you don't already get. And I think, you know, a lot of people might have different answers for this, but for myself, just totally subjectively, I get that maybe you could, if you wanted to go more horror, you could make it more truly frightening, you know, and there was ever a movie like the kind that you and I have talked about of, you know, some Jedi Padawans accidentally trapped in a horrible Sith temple and it's just a haunted house nightmare. And yeah. Great. I can get if that was R-rated, you could go really, really, all in on the horror. And when, you know, some of the Sith spirits would get some of those Padawans, there could be some gore. So I get that. But then that said, with violence, we get a lot of violence in Star Wars. It's implied, but man, especially like the Clone Wars, that is just, the Clone Wars is endless, pretty straightforward slaughter of clones.
Constantly.
Yeah. And then you get into swearing. Mm-hmm. And I personally don't want the F-bomb to exist in in Star Wars. I'd be fine with a ship called the F-wing, but I don't want to hear Earth swearing in Star Wars. I'm happy with Carabast. I'm happy to think Moof Milker's like a really filthy thing that Han said. I'm fine with that. And we've also kind of had it with modern Star Trek, where they swear, and it for me it's like cool. But it doesn't, I don't need it. I don't have any problem with it, but I don't know what's added. And then I guess the next level is just more adult views and discussions on sexual situations, which, again, that's a place that if you want those things in Star Wars, the books go there. There are several books that make it, you know, they're not graphic, but they make it, there's no ambiguity that these two characters had adult relations, you know? So just kind of working through what would be there for an R-rated movie. I think the only thing that I'm intrigued by for myself is something that can go all in on the horror. What do you think about that, about what's actually available in an R-rated film that isn't available in PG-13?
I think it's an excellent point, because I don't think anything new would be available in terms of Star Wars. And that's where I get held up on it. Again, it's not, the violence, you know, let's not overlook that violence is not only present in Star Wars, but often gets even in movies, you know, when I go on a big campaign for the ratings thing, I love Taken. I love Young Guns. I love a good violent movie, just like the rest of you. All right. But, you know, it's like those sometimes we just go like, yeah, cool. The violence. Dear God, two people were kissing. Give it an R. So Star Wars has the violence. But I don't think. And this, I don't know if this is the spirit of Nick's question, because it's clearly a great question. It's got you and I thinking, Joseph. But I think sometimes this is very personal to me, but those in my life who I do hear this a lot, oh, I wish we got an adult Star Wars. They're really just hung up on the surface of that. I'm not saying anyone out there who would want an R-rated Star Wars or TVMA Star Wars is that. Please hear me. Please understand me. It's personal to some people in my life who are just like, yeah, I love that. But they stop there. And they're not getting themes, whether it's a Lego Holiday Special or Phantom Menace or Return of the Jedi. They are more concerned about, man, Luke was up there hacking the blade. He threw the blade away. Yeah, but he was hacking that blade on Vader. And that's just something I see a lot by those folks. Again, I am not saying that's everyone. And I'm not saying that I don't want to see some of this a little bit. It doesn't have to be sex, but it could be, the cabin door closes on the Falcon, you know, like right before the music starts to play. Chewie, go take a walk. Leia, I got a meeting to have here. Yeah, you know, like, okay, I'm not going to say there isn't a part of me that over 40 years of Star Wars hasn't thought about, it'd be fun if, you know, Mandalorian, and we thought might have been a little, you know, dark. And it was. It might be the closest to it, but then it has the cutest thing in Star Wars in it that appeals to kids. So anyways, I'm going down a weird path, Joseph, but yeah, that's the thing. I don't think it would add anything. It is like, yeah, you and I are comedians, but students of comedy. Sometimes a well-placed curse word is perfection for a joke. But a lot of times it's just fluff and adds nothing. It hides the lack of content and depth to a joke, and a good joke has depth. So that's kind of where my mind comes down on it.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, those are great thoughts. And now I may be convinced that I do want to see some scene on the Falcon where the sabacc dice are hanging on the door and Chewie knows. Yeah. I'm sure other people could come.
The funniest thing I've heard in a while. The dice are on the door. You keep on walking.
You just go co-pilot for a while. Yeah, I guess the other thing that I could see with violence is, look, the violence is there. The death count of just the Skywalker saga is astronomical. You know, when we talk about the violence of, you know, the Death Star, of all those Sith Eternal on that whole Sith fleet, we got Anakin igniting his blade in a room full of children. All of the main characters die in Rogue One. There's no shying away from violence in Star Wars, but I can see that maybe Star Wars chooses not to focus on it. So I could also see, like, would something get an R rating if somebody wanted to make a Star Wars, you know, movie that was, you know, the trial of the Imperials, you know, and it wanted to go into the, like, here are all the people you slaughtered, and we're going to really focus on it and really spend time looking at it and thinking about it instead of going, yep, it happened. You can have discussions about it, but a kid can just watch it and go, oh, yeah, I'll have a conversation with my parents about that later. I can see, I guess, if something was going to be R-rated because an examination of violence was the point, and it wasn't necessarily about, cool, look at that, all the blood that spurted when Palpatine ripped that guy's head off. But it was more about, like, let's talk about the real, you know, consequences of violence, some of the stuff that happens in the books.
It's settled. We want to Disney Plus Star Wars when the Millennium Falcon's rocking. Don't bother. Not good.
That's great.
Oh, right. Nick, great question, Nick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great, great thought starter. And as always, Ken and I are talking through our subjective opinions, and I'm sure other people have some different takes on what would or would not make a R-rated Star Wars movie worthwhile. We're going to move on to some questions from Patreon. We're going to start actually with a question from Evan Osborne Lomax. Evan says, do you want to see former Rebel spy Enib Rey return in a story in the near future? Rey is one of the few people in the galaxy who knows the truth about Palpatine, and he found out the hard way at the tips of Papa Palp's zappy fingers. He was then defeated by Leia, who refused to execute prisoners and compromise her morality. We last saw him escaping Rebel capture in Star Wars 19, way back in May of 2016. So what stories would we like to see from the man who is at war with both the Rebels and the Empire? For anybody who has not been reading these, this is the Star Wars mainline, or the what was the mainline of Star Wars comic, dealing with this Rebel spy who discovers the truth of Palpatine and then, I believe, has the viewpoint that the Rebels are not fighting the war to win, that they're being too soft. Ken, do you like Enib Rey? What are your thoughts on him possibly returning?
When he returns in that Sunspot prison arc, this is the one, actually, we just heard another perspective on it in the Afra audio drama. He's there. He's an interesting character. When he popped back up, I did a little bit of, because he was in the, first appeared in the Star Wars Annual number one, like Evan was hinting at here. It's an interesting perspective, and one you could go into. It takes me down that Saw Gerrera path, or, you know, how do you win? And that's the big morals at stake. And that's where I think, obviously, we know where Leia came down on. So yeah, I think it would work too, cause he does escape. So yeah, you bring him on back here between Empire and Return of the Jedi. And what does that kind of character do or think after the fall of the Empire, when the rebellion wins and becomes a new republic? Is he fine with that? Is he okay with that? And what's his reaction, and who's he working for or working against during that time period? So there's interesting things to have in this kind of conflicted character.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this character, and I really like this, all of the things that he represents, that he's, you know, he gets horribly injured after, you know, Leia sends him on this dangerous mission. And it, you know, the dark side kind of pollutes him, where he thinks that kill them all is the answer. And I'm definitely interested in that, what you're talking about, Ken, the sort of another look at this Saw Gerrera type figure. And is he going around trying to, you know, just do horrible violence against the Empire and do things that the rebellion is not willing to do? That part of it's interesting to me. But the thing that's most interesting to me is, as Evan is talking about, that Enib Rey knows the truth about Palpatine. And I love the continuation of this story that in this era, you know, Palpatine's really doing propaganda about hiding the whole Sith thing from the galaxy. So I love the idea of, I would love a story of Enib Rey, like, trying to hijack broadcasts and like trying to basically, you know, fight back against the propaganda and just get the word out to the galaxy of like, he's this horrible Sith. Lightning comes out of his fingers. Cause I think at this point in the galaxy, people are like, yeah, no, what are you talking about? That's not real. That's not true. And like, I could see like this great story of him almost getting the message out, maybe convincing a few people here and there, but, you know, set up to make the big broadcast, and he is hunted down by the sinister agents of the Empire before he can get the truth out.
I like that. Ooh, I like that. Let me tell you about Palpy.
That's right. I basically, yeah, I want to see his propaganda video that he made to share the truth of Palpatine.
Yeah.
The real face, the real melty cheese face of the Emperor is coming at you. From Enib Rey. We're going to close out our questions with a nice juicy run from Alden Diaz. Here's what Alden has to say. It's always with a lot of our great listeners. It's a little bit of an essay as well as a question, which we welcome and are excited by. So here we go. Hey guys, hope all is well in the seemingly never ending quarantine era. My question is regarding the reappraisal and recontextualization of dialogue in the Star Wars mythos. What got my brain going on this topic was a friendly and thoughtful Twitter exchange I had recently about the line, do or do not, there is no try. It's an iconic gem in our pop culture, and even non-Star Wars fans know it quite well. But should we look back on what Yoda was saying there and change up our interpretations based on the added context of the canon stories we've had since. Personally, I think that it's way looser and more amorphous as a statement now that we've seen so many other Jedi Masters and lead characters adding depth to what heroism is, to what struggles are, to what training is like, etc. I wouldn't be so quick to share it on a shirt or a motivational poster these days. And maybe you have other lines of dialogue that you think need to be put back on the table, reappraised, reanalyzed, re-romanticized, etc. What takeaways have you found in them as time has passed? Let me know what you think. Alden, that is a great thought starter and a thing that I think we've discussed a little bit. But Ken, I want to dive into this. Do or do not. There is no try. For you, has that line aged well? What did it mean to you in the past, and what does it mean to you now?
I think it's aged well because we can really dive into Yoda's teachings, because let's not forget when we really kind of meet up with him again as a fandom. Yes, I know Return of the Jedi, Clone Wars, all that kind of stuff, but in the story, in the timeline, Last Jedi, he's there to remind you it's failure. It's a great teacher, right? Folly, past, that's what this is about. So that to me goes against what the public interpretation of do or do not, there is no try, has been become over the years, which is something that I could be guilty of. Not guilty. It's just on the surface, it's a real good pick up your, pick up yourself off the ground and get to it. And you either do it or you don't. And that's it. And succeed or failure and win or lose, that kind of thing. And I'm there for a lot of the lessons in those moments there too. But I don't know. Look, going back, you see even in that scene, right? He's trying to lift the X-Wing out. Luke, doesn't believe it. That is why you fail. It definitely has taken on a new meaning, and it's deeper. And just with what Alden's talking about in the Star Wars story. I also think sometimes it's just a line can slip out of the movie and slip out of the context and just becomes universal, like Alden's saying as well. This is on a poster. This is on a desk. This is on a bumper sticker. And it has some meaning there. It has some meaning on the surface. But if you really dive into what Yoda is always teaching, it has different meanings and it was always meant to grow.
Yeah. Well, I really like that idea that it has meaning that we can analyze in the context of that scene, in the context of what Yoda believes before then, what he believes after then. But I also really like what you're saying about it. It's one thing for what it means in the movie. It's another thing that it has become a well-known and popular phrase that people use, to coach sports or to pump themselves up for an audition to get into a ballet school, of just like, maybe it has been sort of recontextualized out of its meaning in the movie to just being used as a, there's no such thing as failure, Yeah. Or, failure is, not an option kind of statement. And I think that's interesting to consider, was that ever even the intent that it be used so much as the, like, if you think you're going to be a loser, you're going to be a loser. So just go out there and win. Like, it can really tip into that aggressive, there's no middle ground. There's no such thing as failure. It's just, you weren't thinking good until you failed,
Yeah.
And I really like it from the context in the film that this is not necessarily wisdom for all time. This is wisdom for Luke right then. That's what Luke needed to hear, because Luke's doubt in his ability to see the Force in a larger way, was what was holding him back. And it's, a direct response, like, all right, I'll try. And so I like looking at it as that's wisdom that Yoda was giving Luke right then, because that's what Luke needed to hear, because that's what was blocking Luke from moving forward, is if he didn't believe that he could access the Force in that way, if he didn't believe the Force worked that way, then he was never going to be able to do it, and that he was holding himself back. And this is advice to not hold yourself back by pre-deciding that you can't do it.
That's the crux of me. I'm just trying to think of like a real world example. If I was to tell myself this, right? Thinking of some of, you said auditions, that comes to mind. Or I remember the first time I was walking into my very first Groundlings class. And this is the reason I moved to LA, was to study sketching comedy. And I was intimidated. And something like this could come in where it's like, you know, this is either going to take me one way or another. That's not what is important. What's important is that I am here, and I believe I'm to be here. I believe this is where my journey goes from here. Pass or fail, succeed or fail is not the story. It's the mindset and stinking thinking, right? You know, just been like, you need a check up from the neck up and just throwing some Stuart Smalley, Al Franken quotes out from SNL. But it's the same type of thing, you know, so that it's, and it's very easy just to very much look on the surface, because it's the lifting of the X-Wing around that part of the story. And Luke didn't do it, but it's like, it wasn't even about that. It was about that mindset, like you said. And that's where it works for me. And again, probably where it always was. That's why I say it was probably meant to grow. But it caught on. It's just so simple. It's so popular for a reason. And yeah, it's just about the mindset.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I've really interpreted Yoda's teachings to Luke in The Last Jedi as a kind of a direct relationship with do or do not. There is no try. To me, there's so much of the spirit of what Yoda was trying to get through to Luke when he was younger, of the, you're always staring off into the horizon. Your mind is never on where you are. You know, this is not about excitement and adventure. You have to have a serious mind. What makes a Jedi is, you know, being very serious, having an absolute mastery of the Force, and never failing. You know, don't ever believe that you'll fail or you'll fail. So just, you know, be strong, be wise, be masterful. And I feel like Luke, that's one of the beautiful things of that scene to me, is that Luke is trying to live up to all those things. And then Yoda reappears to be like, sorry, my bad. I encouraged you to value those attributes and you've done them admirably, but these other things matter too. And it feels a little bit to me like Yoda saying, I feel like maybe, like Yoda is saying to Luke, I feel like you put do or do not, there's no try, on your bedroom wall, Luke, as a motivational poster,
right?
And you took it a little bit out of context yourself. So let me recontextualize it for you. Of course, sometimes we try and we fail, and we can learn from things, those things too. And that's valuable as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Careful what you put on your walls, kids.
Watch those motivational posters. To the second part of Alden's question, are there other lines in Star Wars that you think are worth revisiting, either because they've been taken out of context in a larger society, or because their meanings have changed for you, or just your great interpretation of these lines and these ideas are meant to grow, that they've grown in some way that isn't ideal to you? Or, you know, have you reexamined other lines like this?
Well, I think there's a great need for a lot of people to reanalyze Kill the Past. That one has been, I don't know, not taken correctly. But let's not go down that route. podcast. You know, for me, though, it's the same movie. No One Has Ever Really Gone is one that I don't wrestle with, but I go back to a lot. And I was rewatching Last Jedi and just, you know, I had some thoughts, still have some thoughts on, you know, the idea of Kylo Ren, is he going to be redeemed? And it's like, well, it seems like Luke and Leia in that scene, you know, Luke's there to, not there to confront him, not there to turn him. He's there to, you know, strike him down in some way. That's what he kind of gives the impression. And Leia's like, you know, I know my son is gone. Well, no one is ever really gone. I've always wrestled with what that means to those two characters in that moment. You know, and then it comes back to play. And, you know, for me now, I look at it and be like, Luke's saying, I'm not here to change him, because that's not my path. That's not what I can do or need to do in this moment. It's not going to be me. And Leia has a little bit of, I don't know, maybe a little bit of doubt. And that's where Luke reminds her. So anyways, I play with that one. And the way I take that line sometimes changes, and definitely after Rise of Skywalker now has the context of the story. So goes back to, you know, Rey had a right line of thinking. It just was how she got there and how she was going to get there, might have been in doubt. So anyways, that one jumps to mind.
Yeah, that's a great one. Yeah. And I love interpreting it as, you know, Luke can't save him because Luke is one of the people that Kylo blames, but the no one's ever really gone is, like, is Luke saying there's still hope for Ben Solo? But also it has this richness of Luke having this understanding that he's going to be haunted by what he did to his father. And the memory of Han is never going to be gone. And the memory of Han is going to affect him. And it even follows through to Luke saying, you know, if you strike me down in anger, I'll be with you always, just like your father. And it's one of the places thematically where I feel like Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker connect just absolutely beautifully. So I think that's a great line to reexamine. For myself, going back to Empire Strikes Back, because I feel like The Last Jedi is really in conversation with Empire in particular. You know, Han's great line. It is a great, scruffy, rebellious action hero line of never tell me the odds. It's one of my favorite lines. I always like it. And it's some of the fun adventure serial side of Star Wars, of this idea of, it almost works a little bit with like, do or do not, there is no try. Just like, if I don't think about how scary it is, I'll be able to do it.
Right.
But it also has this reckless side. So I feel like Poe's storyline is almost in conversation with Never Tell Me the Odds, of saying Never Tell Me the Odds is a great thought. And sometimes that does work. But also there's sometimes where it's irresponsible to not know the odds, and it's irresponsible to be just incredibly reckless. So I don't dislike that line or think that it's wrong or should be corrected. I just like that Last Jedi adds another perspective to that conversation of like, actually, sometimes, whoops, I should have known the odds.
Right.
Yeah.
You can get you in trouble. But
yeah. Final one for me quickly is the short conversation between Anakin and Obi-Wan that locks in Obi-Wan's decision that he has to strike Anakin down, or at least attempt to, in Revenge of the Sith, of Anakin paraphrasing, you know, saying, you know, if you're not with me, then you're my enemy. And Obi-Wan responding only as Sith deal in absolutes. And, you know, a lot of people had fun with that. I almost bought a t-shirt that my friend made of, you know, Sith absolute vodka. Loved it. great jokes to be had. People have pointed out that, well, actually, Obi-Wan, that is an absolute. Right. And for me, just the importance of the idea. Functionally in the film, it is this moment where it locks into Obi-Wan. We're like, hey, I have any hope that you're going to have a different perspective. That's a moment like, okay, that really locks in. You're not going to have a different perspective. But the power of that idea in Star Wars, that the Jedi, you know, have made mistakes in the prequel era, and that's partially because they are locking in on one particular view. And it is very difficult to keep your mind open and look at lots of different views. And I think that's what's really admirable about the Jedi perspective of, let's try to not have absolutes. Let's try to say we really believe this, but then on the other hand, maybe this, which kind of goes to our conversation of sometimes you need do or do not, there is no try. In other situations, you need failure is the greatest teacher. Let's not be absolute about it. There's not one piece of advice for every moment in your life, which to me is a great example of the Jedi perspective of being open to many viewpoints. That's really good. But then, you know, when people have the criticism that, well, Obi-Wan, that is an absolute, that reminds me of a phrase that I believe in real life of the only thing you can't tolerate is intolerance. And that, so to me, sums up the Jedi's relationship to the dark side and to the Sith of, well, we want to agree with every perspective, but this perspective of the Sith dark side, that's the Sith dark side's perspective of, we should have power over everything. We should control everything. We should kill whoever we want. The Jedi are like, that's the one viewpoint that we can't agree with because it will snuff out all other viewpoints. And for an exchange of lines that was very timely, because it was referencing some things that were literally being said by world leaders at the time, and for something that's been, you know, made fun of, I just think there are so many interesting Star Wars philosophical ideas packed into those lines.
All wrapped up in a nice little lightsaber fight.
Yep. And them were literally fighting words.
Yeah. You can enjoy that sequence on many levels. You choose how far you want to go.
Exactly. So great question, Alden. Great thought starter. And I hope that we finished most of our thoughts. Ken, you have any other final thoughts on that question?
No, just I enjoy, this is probably why I enjoy going back to these stories and movies and even books. And I'm looking forward to having the time one day to go back into some of the books again. But we watch them over and over again. And I love when you pick something up new or you connect with something different that maybe was always there, but now you're focused on it because of where your life is. And that just helps do what what Alden says to have these lines reappraised, reanalyzed, and I love this, re-romanticized, because you can fall in love with Star Wars all over again.
Yeah, it worked for me. I'm more excited about Do or Do Not, There Is No Try than I was before our conversation. So what a nice full circle journey for me.
Full circle journey, and our journey is at an end today. Thank you so much to all those folks that have asked questions. And if you have a question, a thought starter, a long, juicy essay, that's what we enjoy. Go reach out on Twitter at ForceCenterPod. Use the hashtag ForceCenter. Like our Facebook page, ForceCenter Podcast. We are on Instagram, YouTube, podcasts available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Just search. If it's not there, let us know. We'll try to get on your podcast spot of choice. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Always enjoy new patrons to help us make plans. New stuff coming soon. And we have our own stuff. You can follow us online for me at Ken Knapsack, or go to my website, Ken Knapsack, where I do have a charity spotlight tab. And we've been spotlighting our own charities and things we're interested here at the end of the show on ForceCenter. And you can check out Stronghold Freedom Foundation at strongholdfreedomfoundation.org. This is suggested by listener Chad Benefield. We talked about it a little bit last week. He had some personal experiences being deployed in Uzbekistan during Operation Enduring Freedom, and they are trying to raise awareness of stuff going that went down there with chemical weapons and toxins, and the effects our veterans who were there are feeling. So go to strongholdfreedomfoundation.org for more information. And Joseph, you got your own charity spotlight and places for them to follow you.
That is right. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all my other comedy adventures, comedy albums, my podcast, Obsessed. And the thing that I want to plug this week is this coming Saturday, August 22nd, I'm doing an online variety show called Nerds and Music. I will be saying some Star Wars jokes, and this is a great big benefit being put on by my friends, the Double Clicks, a great musical duo. And it is going to benefit Mutual Aid Disaster Relief and the MacArthur Project, which is seeking to bring food and clothes and medicine to homeless people in Los Angeles. And if you want to get tickets to that, you can go to thedoubleclicks.com, and it's right there on the front page, Nerds and Music, Saturday, August 22nd.
Love it. Are you ever going to get on the drums there, Joseph? Nerd and Music? Drumming?
No. Oh. Man, I would love to. I would love to. I really got to look into that if I should take up the remaining space in my apartment that is not filled with Star Wars action figures with loud drums to torture my neighbors.
Get back to it. Great stuff. Thank you all for listening today on the News and Cues. We will be looking at the Poe Dameron novel Freefall, the Clone Wars episode Ambush, and a special Star Wars ranked, a continuation of our look at Star Wars figures. All that and more this week on ForceCenter. We'll see you then, my friends. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.